You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today's episode is brought to you by WorldwideGolfShops.com. Look, I don't know if you guys have heard, but 2020 has been one of the weirdest years ever, but also one of the best golf years ever for the industry. And WorldwideGolfShops.com has all of the great gear from all of the top brands, including training aids, apparel, and accessories, everything that you need to get you on the course and playing a little bit better. So go out to WorldwideGolfShops.com today.
You're listening to the Golf Unfiltered Podcast, your source for in-depth interviews with the biggest names, brands, and personalities in golf. Our mission? To keep you informed and help you enjoy the game even more. And now, the owner and host of the Golf Unfiltered Podcast, Adam Fonseca.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Golf Unfiltered Podcast. I am your host, as always, Adam from GolfUnfiltered.com. You can follow me all over social media at GolfUnfiltered. You can get in touch with me over email, adam@golfunfiltered.com. Hello to our friends over at Cleveland, Srixon, and Zegzio. We could finally talk about the new ZX irons. Holy cow, if you follow us all over social media, you've seen everything that we've put out there about these fantastic new clubs. Little teaser, there's something else coming out a little bit soon, but we can't talk about it right now. But we can talk about the exciting new ZX5, ZX7, and of course the utility irons. I've got everything in my bag. I've been playing with them for about a month and a half now, and I'm just so excited to be able to talk to you about them. So today's guest, folks, is Mr. Omar Uresti. You know him as the former PGA Tour player who has had over 350 starts on the PGA Tour, and he is the most recent winner of the Senior PGA Professional Championship earlier this year in 2020. Now, he got a lot of attention, as he normally does when he is successful as a PGA professional, because of a lot of reasons. I think many of them, most of them, if not all of them, are really unfounded, because I think it's clear, as we talk about in today's conversation, that Omar isn't doing anything wrong when it comes to playing in these events. Yes, he had a very long stint on the PGA Tour. He's the guy that was next to Tiger Woods when Tiger made that amazing hole-in-one at the Waste Management Phoenix Open many years ago, and we actually talk about that a little bit today. And it's unfortunate, in my opinion, that he receives some of the criticism that he does when he plays well, now as a lifetime member of the PGA, or the Professional Golfers Association of America. So Omar and I touch on that in the middle of our conversation today. As I mentioned, we also talk a little bit about his early days on the PGA Tour, as well as what's next for Omar, looking ahead not only for the rest of 2020, but into 2021. So I hope you like today's episode. Sit back, relax. We'll be right back after a quick word from our friends over at Ben Hogan Golf Equipment Company. Today's episode is also brought to you by the Ben Hogan Golf Equipment Company. No big hype, no big price, but definitely a big deal. Take advantage of their factory direct model where you cut out the middleman and get the best products shipped to your door direct from the company. They've got a demo program to try out their products before you buy, a trade-up program to get these clubs in your hands even quicker, and special financing where you can split your payment into four to make these clubs even more affordable. Go to BenHoganGolf.com to learn more. Welcome back to the show, folks. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm very excited to welcome on for the first time Mr. Omar Uresti. You know him as a individual who has had over 350 career starts on the PGA Tour, and in recent years, he has won the 2017 PGA Professional Championship, as well as the most recent 32nd Senior PGA Professional Championship. Omar, thanks so much for sitting on our show today.
Yeah, it's good to be on, Adam. Thank you very much.
You and I have connected over social media. Boy, that's a scary place sometimes, isn't it?
It is. It is. Boy, there can be a lot of interesting things going on and being said on those medias, that's for sure.
And so you, you're talking to me from Texas, I imagine. You're still actively playing. You were actually just going out and practicing today. You said trying out some new equipment. How's the game right now?
Not as good as it was a few weeks ago, but it's not too far off. not hitting it quite as well as I did at the senior PPC, but you know, the putting and it has been really good. So that's keeping me in there, but just, you know, trying to work on a few things still and trying to improve every day.
So you turned pro in 91, if I have that correct.
Yes.
You've been doing this for quite a while and over 350 career starts on tour. That's something that not many people have done. Were you even aware of that number?
I knew it was around 300 and something. I didn't know if it was 350. And then I'm sure I got another couple of hundred on the Korn Ferry Tour as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you got a couple wins on the web.com tour. We talked about a couple of the wins that we're going to get more into here in a little bit, but your time on the PGA Tour, I mean, you've seen it all. I'd imagine you've seen everyone that we could probably name. How has the tour changed over the years in your perspective?
It's changed a lot. I started out in 1995 on the PGA Tour, 1993 on the, what is now the Korn Ferry, used to be the Nike Tour when I got on it. It was the old small-headed persimmon wood drivers and fairway woods and, you know, the old Balata golf balls that didn't go as far as the ones now and spun a lot more. So you actually had to, it wasn't really as much about power back then. It was more finesse and shot shaping and being able to control your ball flight, where now it's just a power game. Hit it high and hard and hope it stays in play, and then you just go find it. And, you know, as far as these kids are hitting it, and, you know, and DeChambeau's a good example, hit it 400 yards in the rough and you're sand wedging it out, it's a little easier than, you know, hitting it from 180 out of the rough like I have to do.
Same. Yeah, certainly not as well as you do, but DeChambeau was certainly the topic of discussion over the Masters, obviously. And yeah, I think we saw how this is kind of a two-sided coin, right?
Yeah, it's hit or miss, you know, most of the time. There's hardly any, not as much middle ground when you're trying to hit it as far as he is. You can't always hit it straight. And, and it's just the way golf is. You're not always going to hit it straight. You're not always going to hit it good. You're not always going to make the putts. So, but it has changed a lot. It hadn't been good for me because I'm a smaller guy and I didn't grow up swinging hard at it. So it's hard to pick up distance after a while. And, you know, if, I don't know if I'd even thought about golf as a kid or as a profession as a kid if I was growing up nowadays with my size, you know. But there are a couple of smaller guys out there that are doing fairly well. And but it definitely, technology has not helped the small guy. It's only helped the big guy, really.
And it almost seems like, to that point, and you even touched on this, kids coming up now who want to chase that dream to get on tour, it's almost like you have to have a body type to even consider that.
Yeah, nowadays you do. And, you know, now they know more about fitness training for it. So, you know, they train for it physically and mentally now. Back in the day when I was growing up, you know, we didn't have all that mental training or the fitness training. We were actually scared to work out because we were afraid of getting too bulky and not being able to make a good turn or, you know, just tightening us up. So we didn't work out a lot. It wasn't really until, you know, Greg Norman was kind of the start of it. And then obviously, you know, Tiger came around and just changed the game dramatically and, you know, got a lot of fans that came to the game because of him. And it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I was part of one of his most famous shots ever. So
that's right. Over at the Waste Management, right?
That is correct. Yeah. I hit my tee shot. I actually had the tee on that 16th hole and, I hit my, tee shot to about 2.5 feet right behind the hole and got the crowd going a little crazy. And every time he swung, I would turn my back to him and just kind of listen for the ball to go because I didn't want to watch his swing and get out of my rhythm. And so, because he just swung so fast through the ball, you know, and he just hit it so hard at the time, it was just incredible. So I would turn my back, and after I hit my shot, I thought to myself, let's see you hit it closer than that. And turned my back, listened. I took about 10 steps. I looked up. I saw the ball go bounce, bounce, in, and I just kind of shook my head and thought, only Tiger. And turned around, and we proceeded. I to whiff on a high five because I kind of held back because he was swinging so hard I didn't want to hurt my wrist. And, you know,
he was pumped up.
Second one. So, but it was, you know, I short armed that high five, which was probably a good thing.
Yeah, he was packing some heat behind that high five. He was geared up at that point.
He was. It was an exciting round shot, and you know, one that I'm proud to be a part of. And you know, funny thing is that he ended up birdieing 18 to beat me by a shot that day.
Mm.
And he hit driver wedge into 18. I hit driver 5-iron, so it was a little easier to get his wedge close because the pin was kind of tucked back right. But he hit it in there about 10 feet, and I think I hit mine about 25 feet, and I two putted, and he made his. But he, yeah, cut me by a shot with that birdie. So it took a hole in one and a birdie for him to beat me that day.
You know? Something to hang your hat on there, sir. You know, it's funny just hearing you recollect that day. I mean, this was a while ago now. And are you one of those guys that can remember every shot, every pin position?
Most. Yeah, I'm kind of half and half. If it's a good, exciting round, yes. Pretty much, you know, I was the first professional golfer in a professional tournament to make 9 birdies in a row in 1994 in that Nike Shreveport Open. And I remember almost every single shot of that and the putts. You know, a couple of the holes, the 7th and 8th hole get a little blurry. But for the most part, yeah, I remember almost all those shots.
It's funny because when people say that they're in the zone, I've not experienced this, but when they're in the zone, you almost think that they're, you know, they say they're unconscious. They don't know what they're doing.
It is,
but in fact,
so true. It was funny. I was at Shreveport. I was playing with Perry Moss, who was, had gone to LSU, and we were playing in Shreveport, Louisiana. So he had a pretty good crowd following him to start the day. And you know, we probably had 100 people starting the day following us around, it seemed like. And then by the time I got done with my 9 in a row, there had to be at least 1,000 people, and I hardly noticed them. But I remembered one gentleman come up to me walking off the 12th tee, and he was like, hey, man, I got this Civil War belt buckle right here. I'll give it to you after the round, you know. And I'm like, sir, right? Not right now. It's not a good time right now.
He wanted to give you a belt buckle.
Yeah, the Civil War belt buckle. I would have been more than happy to take it. I never saw him at the rest of the day, though.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's funny too about, you know, galleries. Obviously, you know, there's a big part of the game right now that's kind of missing from a lot of these tournaments. You know, and, you know, having those stories about interacting with fans, and a lot of times, especially in recent years where everyone's got a cell phone and camera, I mean, it's almost like you wanted, I've always wondered what it's like to walk through a crowd like that. Do you enjoy those situations?
Yeah. As long as there's an alleyway for us to get through. Yes. I've tried, where was it? I guess it was the PGA Championship at, at Kohler.
Yep.
What is that, 2015?
Mm.
Ooh, yeah, there were so many people there, and I had to walk through some of that gallery not playing. And it gets, you know, kind of tight, and it was a hot day that day. And, you know, I know there were some fans that were having trouble and getting heat stroke and stuff because it was just so hot, which was kind of odd for Whistling Straits. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's not very much fun, but you know, when playing and they, you know, they're able to open up an alleyway for you to walk through. Yeah. It's a pretty good feeling. It's a pretty awesome feeling, especially, when they're, you know, cheering you on and stuff. It's just something else. It's hard to explain.
Could only imagine. I mean, as somebody that's been in the gallery, I've seen you in person a few times. I live not too far from Cog Hill.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you've definitely been around, and now, as time has gone on, you know, your career has gone in the direction it is now. And now you're the reigning champion of the senior PGA professional. that's an incredible feat in and of itself. And I know that you get a lot of mixed reaction regarding these wins. What is that like right now? I mean, we'll dive into it, but hearing that reaction, I mean, how does that feel?
Yeah. You know, I understand where a lot of those guys are coming from, or people, because it's there has been both men and women. But you know, they, yes, I played the tour for all those years, but I really haven't played full time since 2012, so I'm not really considered a tour pro anymore. Mm-hmm. And you know, I do. Well, I'm here in Austin. I host a fundraiser every year. We unfortunately weren't able to have it this year because of COVID, but it's a first tee fundraiser. You know, so I do my part of promoting the game as best I can in the ways I know how. And I understand where those, you know, that have negative things to say, that where they're coming from. And it's, you know, it's hurtful because they don't know me. They don't know what I'm doing really. And they don't know what, you know, what all's happened.
And just to add context to this, as I understand it, the critique that you receive, if you can call it that, is, you know, you're a lifetime member of the PGA, as I understand it. You know, yes. That's a rule that you're not doing anything wrong.
Correct.
You played for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you can fill in some of the gaps that I'm missing here, but basically you're doing exactly what you are able to do. And by the way, you're not the only one.
Right. I just happen to be the one that's won.
Exactly. So for the listeners, you know, maybe help us understand, or help me understand, you know, what does that process look like? You know, where are you? How are you in the position that you are so that you can play in these events?
Okay. Well, when I first got out on the Nike tour in 1993, they recommend all members of the Nike or Korn Ferry tour now and PGA tour to join the PGA of America. That way, and you pay your dues, your annual dues yearly, you know, so you're paying your yearly dues to be a member of the PGA of America. And in so doing that, if you get enough, earn enough points or money, now you're able to, if you qualify, to play in the PGA championships. So most guys, I don't know if the foreigners have to do it as much, but you have to be a member of the PGA of America in order to play the PGA championship. And so that was the start of that. So I started paying my dues in 1993. And then after 2012, I lost my status and actually got, you know, didn't really have anywhere to play for a good year and a half, 2 years. And I was, you know, got fairly depressed, put on like 20, 25 pounds. And, you know, I'm 5'6". I'm normally around 175, 180, and I got up to 200. And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, okay, I'm getting close. You know, in a few years, 4 or 5 years, I'm going to be turning 50. I got to get ready for the Champions Tour. What can I do? And I called our section president, and he's like, well, you can change your status from an A3, which is a tour pro in the PGA of America, to a life member and continue paying your dues, but now you have to fulfill credits. So now I have to MSR points or MSR credits. Mm-hmm. So now I have to attend meetings, and I have to go to, you know, and I think it's 36 credits every 2 years for the meetings and teaching side of it. And then they have, I guess, some playing point credits that you get as well. So it's a total of like 56 or something every 2 years. And, you know, just actually a week ago, just went over to Houston and there was a teaching seminar there, and, you know, learned some good stuff there. Once, you know, that I could use for if and when I do teach. I do give a couple of lessons here and there. So, you know, that helps a lot to be able to see how other guys do it and what their theories are and how they, you know, get their students. So you pay your dues. I was able to change to a life member after 20 years. And then now I got to fulfill the MSR points every 2 years so I can play in these competitive tournaments. So that's kind of it. Now for the future, they just changed the rule for guys coming off the tour or for life members that you now have to go through the testing. I guess they have three levels of testing. So now I think you have to take all three levels of testing in order to become a life member and be able to compete in the tournaments that I've been playing in. So, you know, then I think I was the one that kind of spread that process along. They had been kind of working on it, but it wasn't getting as much noise, I guess, before I came out. And then once I started playing, and it started playing fairly well, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like I'm winning every single one of them. It took me 3 years before I won the one in 2017. And I haven't even sniffed doing as well since. So,
right. Well,
in that one until the senior, you know, that, like, I played in three senior ones now, and I think I finished, fifth. No, I finished second, fifth, and then I won this year. So,
right.
You know, if one for three, I can handle that, but it's not as, you know, it's not like I'm winning every single tournament. And all I know is that guys are working harder now at their games because they are playing a lot better than what they were. So it's not easy. And if anything, in my opinion, it's been good for the game, or for the PGA of America, a little more experienced player. I wouldn't say better, a little more experienced player out there. And the guys that are out there playing really don't seem to have as much of an issue, because, you know, they're able, and I get this from a few of them, that, you know, heck, about playing with me, they can learn because of my experience. You know, right. I get a lot of questions asked to me about certain shots and how do I handle this and that. And, you know, so they're taking it as a learning process and hoping to be able to improve their game. And I'm more than happy to help them all out, you know, if I can.
And it feels like the people who are not as well informed about how this process works, they see something like, or they see someone like yourself who is successful, who they've seen on television, who they've seen at PGA Tour events, and then they see it's the PGA, you know, professional championship, and they're like, well, this guy's not in a pro shop, you know, that I go to. He's not folding shirts, is the thing I keep hearing. And it's like, well, if that's how you define a PGA professional, maybe the problem isn't with the person who's actually playing well enough to win the events.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and some of them, yeah, I mean, and usually, like I said, most of the ones that you're hearing from are the guys that are in the shop. And granted, they work way too many hours. These clubs, they need to get two or three more pros so everybody can have a chance to work on their game, so they can actually play better golf and feel like they're able to put the time in to get better. You know, but a lot of these places, you know, these guys are working 60 to 70, 80 hours a week, and it's hard to find time. And, you know, I feel for those guys. I know I grew up going to the shop every day and seeing how much these guys work. So I feel for them, and I know how hard it is to be able to work in the shop and also get the game, in shape, but also there's several guys that, you know, are able to keep the game in shape and are working quite a bit. So, kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't, I guess.
Well, isn't that the world in which we live in now, right? Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where I think the loudest critics come from keyboards.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I try, you know, and like I said, I understand both sides of it. I see where they're coming from, I made sure I worked hard enough when I was a kid and tried to work hard enough as a kid and through college to be able to get on tour. And I was, you know, fortunately I had the mental fortuity to be able to do it. Where a lot of these guys, they got great golf swings and they got game, but a lot of them don't have the mental fortitude to keep it up or to keep after it. And then a lot of the times you try it for a couple of years. Well, now you're out of money. So now you got to go work. And, you know, they start working, hoping to make some money to try it again. But then their game just kind of falters because now they're having to work too much.
Has that changed as well? Like the teams that these players have around them? It's like you need a mental coach. You need everybody. a therapist? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Is that, how much has that changed?
It's changed a ton. Yes. I mean, yeah, you have so many more sports psychologists. You got guys that travel with fitness trainers. unfortunately, you know, out on the PGA Tour and Champions Tour, they have the fitness trailers go around. So you got therapists that are able to work on you, physical therapist and trainers, you know, that can give you workout routines to work on. And, but there are, you know, the majority of the top ranked guys are using their own trainers and stuff. So it's a totally different game now, but with as much money as they're making, if you're winning or in the top 5 or 10, you can afford to do that. You know, I was always just barely squeaking by, so I couldn't really afford to have all that, especially back in the 90s and early 2000s. It was, you know, not, the money hadn't quite jumped up at that time, and it was just starting to, but it hadn't.
As the game continues to evolve, and listeners, once again, we're talking to Mr. Omar Uresti, as the game continues to evolve, obviously a lot of focus is on equipment. A lot of focus is on what the equipment's doing to golf courses, you know, what golf courses need to do to keep up. Is that just a bunch of hubbub that we don't really need to worry too much about?
Well, you know, the game has changed. The equipment's changed it. The courses, unfortunately, the majority of them that we used to play, unfortunately, were great golf courses that, because of technology, almost have become obsolete. But at the same time, they really haven't, because we used to play some pretty tight golf courses, and it was, you know, like I said, it was more of a shot shaper's golf game. And I think the equipment kind of started changing, but the golf courses started getting longer and wider open. So it's kind of that thing, you know, which came first, the distance or the longer golf courses? Well, I think the longer golf courses started coming right at the time the ball started changing. But the course designers nowadays don't, in my opinion, are trying to combat that long hitter. And in the process of doing that, they're hurting the short hitter.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, they're hurting the average golfer. Because it's, you know, a lot of those average golfers want to try to get back there and play the big tees, and you just can't do that. So I would like, you know, just like every other sport, in my opinion, I would like to see the club head shrink. I would like to see more spin on the ball. Just because we're pros, we ought to be able to hit smaller equipment. We ought to be able to hit that ball that spins more, be able to hit it straighter. I mean, you got different size footballs, you got different size baseballs, you got aluminum bats versus wooden bats. You got different size rackets and compression tennis balls. So all these other sports seem to have different sizes for their amateurs and their pros, or different weights or whatever it might be. I don't see why golf can't do the same thing. I mean, people are going to buy the brand equipment that the pros are using, not necessarily the brand or not the exact same equipment. I mean, even though they'd like to, I mean, it's hard to hit an 8.5 degree driver if you're a 20 handicap.
Yeah, or what Bryson's swinging, what, a 5 degree? I mean,
yeah, yes, exactly.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing. I'm glad you said that. That's the one thing that frustrates me the most about the argument, is other sports have found a way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you just described. And I know one of the counter arguments that I always hear that just makes me so angry is, well, everyone has to play the same thing, as you just mentioned. Well, that's not happening right now.
No.
So what actually is going to change if we go to something like completely bifurcate and have pro only equipment? I based on what you're saying, I think we're in agreement that probably not much.
Yeah. No. And, you know, and then that way the courses, then they don't have to get more land for these to add on to these golf courses. And that's the toughest thing. A lot of these courses are restricted because they're older and there's not much room to grow. You know, and so it's just, I would like to just see more spin and smaller headed drivers or smaller headed fairway woods like we used to. We're pros. We ought to be able to hit that smaller equipment.
Yeah, and we'd like to see you do it too. Yeah. That's why we like to watch you. Well, Omar, we're up about time here. What's next for you? What's going on? Well, the rest of the year, next year?
The PGA of America has some winter, I guess, what are they called? The Winter Series tournaments. At the beginning of December, we have 6 2-day tournaments. And it'll be majority guys from the north, because all the clubs are closed, coming down and playing in these 6 2-day tournaments. Just fun. It's a fun deal. You know, there's a little bit of money involved, but it's just more for fun and camaraderie. And it's a lot of fun to go down there and play and see guys every year and hang out with them. And then after that, at the beginning of the year, in January, February, they have their winter championships, where there's a quarter century tour, so being a member of the PGA of America for 25 years or more. And then they have their senior stroke play tournament. And then we have a senior junior tournament where we partner up with someone under 50.
Nice.
You know, I'm going to be partnering up with Rich Berberian. I think he's in his early, mid-30s. And we're going to give it a shot. We play best ball. And then Bob Sowards and I, the next event after that is it's called the Four Ball Stableford. So it's a two-man best ball Stableford format tournament. And Bob and I are going to see what we can do with that. Bob Sowards won the senior PPC. And he also won the open age division as well. So I think there were four of us only that have won both of them. And so, it's pretty honored to be in that category there, because there's some pretty good players that have done that. And
yeah,
just fortunate enough to be able to have done that as well. So, and then hopefully start chasing some of the Champions Tour Monday qualifiers around.
Nice. That'll be great to see out there as well.
So, yeah. And also after winning the senior PPC a month and a half ago, then that qualified me to, as well as the top 35, I believe, qualified us to get in the senior PGA championship this year, or this coming year, up at Southern Hills in Oklahoma.
That's fantastic. You got to be excited for that.
Yeah, very excited. I've never played up there. I got a bunch of friends up there. So hopefully one of my best buds, a really good buddy of mine, his name's Rodney Carrington, lives up there. And he's a kind of a country comedian. So we'll be hopefully be able to hang out with him some that week.
Well, sir, keep up the good work. Thank you so much for coming on and telling our listeners a little bit about your story, talking about a lot of topics. We covered a lot more than I thought we would, and I'm glad we did. You stay safe, and I'm sure we'll talk more.
All right, Adam, anytime.